Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the Inside China Basin Baseball Podcast on thesportsvirus.com and now on canbr.com, featuring players like all-star catcher Buster Posey.
It's about, you know, just going out and trying to have passion for the game that I've loved since I was a kid.
And San Francisco Chronicle columnist John Shea is our regular guest, too.
Bumgarner, he's a god, isn't he? He does all these things that no other humans do.
Inside China Basin is brought to you by Sun First Solar. Others promise the moon, they deliver the sun. We're also brought to you by Rose's Cafe, a favorite in the Cow Hollow neighborhood of San Francisco for the past 20 years. Today we have part two of our conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle, but first let's learn more about our sponsors. Jones goes back near the wall, shading the sun, and he dropped it! He lost the ball in the sun! Let's put the sun to good use at home with a SunPower residential solar system. Your SunPower elite dealer, SunFirst Solar, has a wide range of financing options, and they provide the finest customer service from start to finish, regardless of size or scope. SunFirst Solar offers the highest efficiency systems, newest technology, and the best warranty in the world. SunFirst Solar offers the most competitive price while not compromising on quality. This summer, let the sun heat your pool and eliminate your energy bill. Don't drop the ball. Call SunFirst Solar at 415-458-5870. That's 415-458-5870. And get your SunPower solar system today.
Right about the time when AT&T Park had groundbreaking ceremonies in the late 90s, San Francisco was celebrating the opening of Rose's Cafe at 2298 Union Street. Now, 20 years later, Rose's continues to provide a warm, friendly atmosphere, and you can still count on great food. Italian fare created using organic local produce, fresh seafood, humanely raised meats, and free-range poultry. Rose's bakes all of their own pastries and breads. Open 7 days a week, they serve breakfast, lunch, dinner, and brunch on Saturday and Sunday. Check out their menu and hours at www.rosescafesf.com. The next time you're driving to or from AT&T Park, stop by Rose's Cafe in Cow Hollow at 2298 Union Street in San Francisco.
We all know the orange and black could use an extra insurance run from time to time. And when it comes to business and commercial insurance, personal insurance, or life and health insurance, we could all use a dependable insurance agency to navigate the obstacles that get in our way. Mitchell & Mitchell is that dependable insurance agency. Whether it's business and commercial insurance, life and health insurance, or personal insurance, including auto, home, renters, RV, boat, flood, earthquake, and umbrella, Mitchell & Mitchell Insurance Agency is there for you. Oh, and tack on financial planning to the list. That comes in handy, just like that insurance run. Call Mitchell & Mitchell today at 888-512-8878. That's 888-512-8878. Or go to MitchellandMitchell.com. Now it's time for part two of our conversation with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. Well, John, in an 11-day span, four Giants have either been taken to the hospital or sustained a serious injury. And I'm talking about Buster Posey, the concussion DL, Jared Parker, the broken clavicle, Bruce Bochy with the heart procedure, and now this, Madison Bumgarner, put on the DL for the first time in his career after a dirt bike injury that occurred on the off day. And it turns out that he's not a god after all, like we all thought he was. I mean, and you know, I guess players sometimes think that they're invincible. He sustains bruised ribs and a left AC shoulder strain. We're not sure how long he's going to be out. It's been reported by Ken Rosenthal from Fox that it could be 6 to 8 weeks. What a devastating injury for the Giants, who really seem to have bad luck these days. And, you know, this one really takes the cake because here's your ace pitcher, and now he's going to be out for a while.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the 6 to 8 weeks. They don't even know if it's a grade one or grade two yet. Once they know that, then they can determine the extent of his absence. But it's real possible this guy could be lost till August. And that's a big blow for a team that is looking to get deep into the postseason. It's given us all the signs that this is not the year. And how often can you say that in April? Pretty much never. But the things that have gone on are a sign that, I mean, you look at left field, you look at the bullpen, which has been hot and cold. You look at, Kane's been on and off lately. He's been pretty good. But they're not getting any production in left field, hardly any in center. Posey missed that time, and I think they were very fortunate on that front. But this one, I mean, it wasn't a knee, it wasn't an ankle, it wasn't anything but his left shoulder. It wasn't his right shoulder, it was his left shoulder. Aren't we told how to fall as kids, especially if we're pitchers? Don't fall on that
right.
valuable arm. Don't pick up luggage with that valuable arm. Don't do anything with that valuable arm. But this guy fell off a dirt bike, a motorized dirt bike. And one thing is, as far as we know anyway, he fessed up. He could have covered it up. There are stories of a lot of athletes who might have tried to cover things up, as we know, right?
Yeah, no truck washing here,
no
like Jeff Kent
mm-hmm.
in 02.
Well, it's hard to cover things up these days with social media, with witnesses all around. I'm not saying that there were witnesses or many of them. It might have been a remote area in Colorado. But, hey, listen, these sides have a good relationship, the pitcher and the club. And, they're talking about a long-term deal, and Bumgarner wouldn't have done him any favor to suggest that it was anything other than what it was. And as far as we know, that's exactly what it was. And this rotation took a hit. The team took a hit. Bumgarner, Bochy, the entire organization, the fans don't know what to think. Are they bummed out because he's missing time, or are they bummed out because he did something to hurt the team that really shouldn't be done during the baseball season? Do that in the off season.
Yeah,
don't
I think they're
put
yeah.
your team in danger or at risk by putting yourself in danger or at risk.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of fans that are probably really angry about this. And you can understand that part of it. Why take the risk this time, during the baseball season? He is very remorseful about it. His pitching coach, Dave Righetti, came out and said, off days are the freaking worst. That's what he's quoted as saying for all of us for years. So, you understand a guy in his 20s, we've all made mistakes. We've all taken risks that we shouldn't have taken, especially when you're younger and you're in your 20s and you're Bumgarner. You think that you're invincible. I mean, we think that he might be invincible, and maybe he had that feeling of that. I could just do anything I want and nothing's ever going to come back and bite me. It does. So I feel bad for him that this happened. I don't necessarily blame him, but I do understand fans getting angry about it. How do you feel about it?
You're 27. You have millions of dollars in the bank. You throw a baseball for a living. It's kind of a violent thing with the arm. You've thrown 1,500 innings in your career. You've never been on the disabled list. Invincible? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you got to think you're invincible.
Right.
Everything I do is golden. I've won 3 rings. I've led this team in many a postseason. I've carried the load. In the regular season, I throw 200 innings, make 32, 33, 34 starts. Invincible, absolutely. But hey, it's a fluke, it's a freak, and it's costly.
It is, but you do look at late last year, Clayton Kershaw, he missed a big chunk of time for the Dodgers. Now, yeah, they're a deep team, but they made the National League Championship Series. Or I go back to 2012, and honestly, John, when Melky Cabrera was suspended and just done with the Giants, I thought they're going to be done, but they go on and win the World Series. Now, if Bumgarner's out, let's say, for a couple of months, I mean, the season isn't over. It's a big chunk, but it's not over, and maybe they have some pitchers here who can step in. I mean, no doubt that Ty Block is no Madison Bumgarner, but he might be effective. I mean, we'll have to see how that works out. And he's going
to be the starter there. That's a great point. When Kershaw had that back injury and missed all that time, the Dodgers, everyone just wrote him off. There's no way this team can rebound. Well, they played better with him than without him, so that when he did come back fresh, they took it from there. So it's that kind of thing, the human element, the human drama. Can we rally this as a team rather than rely on the big man, next man up, all the cliches. But it really comes down to it's everybody doing his job, maybe a little better than what you were doing it yesterday. And that goes for left field, and that goes for center field, and that goes for the bullpen. You know, three questionable areas on this team. The outfield as a whole hasn't been great. And the catching situation with Posey missing time, that was up in the air, but he's back. He seems fine. You hope nothing further happens to him with foul tips, et cetera. But it just doesn't seem like a thing. I mean, the way they're losing games, you know, with Cueto most recently, earlier with the bullpen and a lack of production and just not getting it done. You know, they just don't have that clean look to them like they need to have, because this Dodger team could go off. I mean, they have their own issues. They have a bunch of guys on the DL, and they too are not getting much production in left field or center field. They got guys, important guys, who are hurt. But you know what? They're going to be playing the Giants an awful lot in the next week and a half, and I'm looking forward to that. They won't have Bumgarner, which is good for the Dodgers because they don't hit lefties anyway. But Ty Block pitched pretty well against them last year.
And it would be Ty Block going against the Dodgers on Monday in place of Madison Bumgarner at AT&T Park. So we'll see right off the bat how Ty Block handles that. Now, Chris Stratton was called up. I mean, you know, he's part of the 40-man roster. He's been terrible in Sacramento. His first couple of starts, 7.84 ERA. So he's going to be in long relief. And now, John, the temptation is there with Tyler Beede. And we already talked in our last podcast about Christian Arroyo. And, you know, maybe, you know, you do something with left field and Arroyo is called up because he's hitting so well. And there's, you know, you have to really be careful with that because you bring somebody up, like we talked about, and he's a young kid, and, you know, throw him in there to the Wolves, and it doesn't succeed, and then it could really set him back. Now, Tyler Beede, he's pitched well in his first few starts with Sacramento, and he's more of an accomplished pitcher who pitched at Vanderbilt, and you wonder if the temptation will be there that Beede might come up during this time. I got to imagine that he would, right?
Well, the thing about elite prospects, unlike, you know, people you just call up for a week, is when you do call them up, you want them to stay.
Right.
You don't want them to come up, struggle, send them down, and see what he can do. It, you know, the way the Giants look at it, they want Christian Arroyo, they want Tyler Beede to force the issue, to force them to make the move because they're pitching or hitting so great that it supersedes any needs they may or may not have. So whether the Giants have a need or not, and they certainly do now, is not the issue when you call up an elite guy, because the elite guy in the Giants' mind is there for the long haul, not just to fill a spot. You can get plenty of guys to fill a spot, and that's what they're doing now. So they got to tread water and go there. But, you know, I don't think you're going to see Beede anytime soon. I think down the road, maybe. And also, you know, the Giants kind of have a history. Do you remember when they called up Lincecum? They didn't have to. Mm-hmm. When they did in May, by doing so that early, they could have waited a month. But he went to free agency 1 year earlier. He would have been eligible for free agency 1 year earlier. You know, and the same with some other guys. Where some teams kind of wait on their prospects to call them up in late May, early June, so that the arbitration clock doesn't start to tick and you get them for one more year before free agency, et cetera. So, you know, the Giants have had a history of, you know, bringing them up when it's time to bring them up.
Right.
Remember when Lincecum was pitching so well, they brought him up. Well, in this case, I don't think they're going to look at that maybe as much as other teams. You know, they're filthy rich. They can afford to do a lot of things other teams don't do. But in this case, I think it'll be when they do call them up, it'll be for the long haul, not to just see if they do well. After three or four starts, if they struggle, send them back. They got to have enough confidence that when they do come up, they're not going to struggle. They're going to succeed and stay.
Yeah, and I agree with that philosophy. Now, the last part of this, and speaking of being filthy rich, I mean, you can afford to give Madison Bumgarner a long-term extension. Yesterday, you probably would have said, okay, let's just go for that. Now, now I don't know. I mean, you know, you got to see what happens with this injury, but it's really bad timing for Mad Bum. His contract is not great. I mean, he signed it early on, and, you know, he's obviously outpitched that contract. and he was hoping for this extension. Everybody thought that was going to happen. You wonder how this is going to affect it.
Yeah, I that was one of the first things that I thought of when I heard about it. And, you know, I realized he wasn't seriously injured. You know, he's not going to spend a week or a month in a hospital. You know, it's more of an injury that you're at the hospital for a little bit, you get out, and you have a shoulder, you have some rib issues, then you can get over it and you'll pitch again. But it's just a bad vibe. It's a bad feeling. It's a bad PR thing on both sides. So, you know, it's kind of embarrassing. Bumgarner supposedly is remorseful. So neither side will be talking about a contract anytime soon, publicly or probably privately as well. Now, I'm not saying it's not going to get done. He signed through 2019. So he's got a couple more years after that. He has plenty of time to make up and, you know, obtain that goodwill that he might have lost here. And again, you know, the key issue in the Giants' minds, and probably should be in the fans' mind, is that he wasn't more seriously hurt. You know,
right.
we've seen some ridiculously unfortunate circumstances of major league ball players dying recently,
right,
over the past year or two in just bizarre accidents that are just horrific, and we can't even imagine how they and their families, you know, what the families have gone through and the teams or whatever. But in Bumgarner's case, you know, it was something he shouldn't have done. You know, he got hurt. And it's more of a baseball thing, not a life-threatening thing. So I think that's the first thing that the team and fans should realize and be thankful for. But on the business side, it just doesn't look good.
All right, we'll have much more of our chat with John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle right after this. A little reminder, each week during the season, we'll be giving away a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. All you have to do is ask a question for one of our guests, and if your question is chosen, you'll receive a free T-shirt from thesportsvirus.com. To send your questions in, email us at thesportsvirus@gmail.com or on Facebook, thesportsvirus.com page, and please like us while you're there. I wanted to talk to you about Buster Posey, and you know, you wrote a story about his beaning. They never really classified it as being a concussion, but he had the concussion symptoms, so they were smart to sit him down for a while, put him on the 7-day DL. Now he's back, and then he comes back and gets 3 base hits in the Tuesday game at Kansas City. So, you know, it appears that everything's fine with him. But you had to wonder, after he got hit, and anybody who was at the home opener for the Giants heard that sound throughout AT&T Park. It was so loud. And you wondered about a possible fear factor just getting back into the batter's box when you get hit by a 94-mile-an-hour fastball. And it looks like Posey's okay with that, but you know, just wondered about that going into it, because there has been precedent for other hitters having that fear factor.
Yeah, there's a whole history, and it's kind of tragic in a lot of ways. Some of these hitters whose careers have ended or never been the same, and you can go back to the era where helmets weren't worn. You can go back to the era where ear flaps were still not worn. And then even now, with helmets being worn, it's mandatory, obviously. You guys are still getting hurt. It really doesn't matter if you're hitting the helmet. It still phases you. It still dings you up. And you can get severely hurt that way. And even with the helmet, I mean, guys are hit in the face, you know, broken jaw, eye issues, vision problems. And, I mean, you could go back, and I did sort of a history of the beanings, and what a subject that is, right?
Oh.
I mean, you can go back to the beginning, the worst of all, when Ray Chapman of the Cleveland Indians was drilled by Carl Mays of the Yankees, and he died the next day. 12 hours later, he died. And,
sad, yeah.
You know, this was 1920, and not till 1971 did they actually say that helmets need to be mandatory. Are you kidding me? I mean, there was talk over the decades, and you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates, then run by Branch Rickey, you know, all had some kind of headgear. It was mandatory just in that organization, but league-wide, major league-wide, there was nothing until, you know, until decades later. You know, in 1956, you know, the National League said you got to wear some kind of headgear, but it wasn't until 71 that helmets were mandatory. And then it wasn't until 1983 that they actually put the ear flaps down. So it's somewhat new. And then most recently in 2013, they you know, Rawlings came out with this helmet called the S100 Pro Cop, which is like a carbon fiber shell and supposed to resist 100 mile per hour fastballs, you know, a lot stiffer, a lot stronger, that kind of thing than the old plastic shells. But still, as we saw with Buster Posey, you can get hurt. Thankfully for him and thankfully for everybody, it was only a week. But, you know, there's been a long run, you know, Tony Conigliera, Dickie Thon, you know, Don Zimmer back in the day. And, you know, he had to spend his whole life with four screws in his skull. Mickey Cochran, the great Hall of Fame catcher, was beamed in 1937 and had to retire. You know, and bringing it closer to home with Robbie Thompson, J.T. Snow. You know, remember Snow was hit by Randy Johnson in the spring of 1997, and you know they put him in an ambulance and brought him next door to Scottsdale Hospital, and you know he was out for a while, but he rebounded. See, he had 28 home runs that year, career year, his first year with the Giants in '97. But on the flip side, Robbie Thompson was hit in late in '93. You remember the great division race, the Giants and Braves, 104 wins to 103, and Robbie didn't play again. He was out for 7 to 10 days or whatever it was. But he played that final game. He didn't get a hit, but he wore a mask. And, you know, and then he didn't really play so much after that. I mean, the next 3 years, there were a lot of injuries and shoulder issues and surgeries. So you know, he wasn't the same. And, you know, that happened to Paul Blair, you know, longtime Orioles outfielder. Got hit midway through his career, and he wasn't as dominant as he was at one point. So, you know, a lot of guys, Kirby Puckett, you know, same thing. But it happens over time, and, you know, it was Buster Posey's turn. And, you know, bringing it more to recent Giant history, you have Joe Panik last year.
Against Matt Moore,
on the helmet.
Right?
Yeah, you know, he was hit on the helmet, and he hit a home run later in the game, and he continued to play. And then, you know, as we all know, these concussions can sort of hit you days later, and that's what happened to Panik. And he didn't rebound at all in the second half because of the concussion, and had vision problems, and, you know, said in spring training that he's good to go now, and he's playing every day again, and he's hitting, but. You know, with Brandon Belt, he's had three concussions, and, you know, one going back to college at the University of Texas when he was hit in the head, and this was 09, and they just didn't have the concussion protocol like they do now, and it was the college playoffs, and he played the next day and the next day. It wasn't a big thing for him. He says, in retrospect, probably wasn't a great idea. But so he's had two more concussions in the big leagues, one when Marco Scudero hit him in the head during BP with the ball. That Belt didn't see, and, you know, another time when Belt was sliding and got kneed in the head. And then last year in Miami, he didn't get a concussion, but he was beamed again and stayed in the game, and, you know, he was hitting the helmet. So, I mean, you got to be real careful with these things because everybody is different. Every concussion is different. Everybody reacts and responds to it differently. So you just don't know about Buster. Three hits in the opening game, but, you know, they're talking about putting him behind the plate maybe, you know, shortly thereafter. You know, is that the best idea? Or do you put him at first base and put Brandon Belt in left field for a month? That's the question. And nobody really knows the answer to that.
No, I mean, I remember I talked to Brian Sabian during spring training about Posey and, you know, the long-term issues that could exist with him getting drilled all the time back behind the plate. And, you know, he said, I mean, they signed Nick Hundley because he's a backup and Posey's their guy. He's their catcher. And everybody knows that, you know, that's what they want him to do. That's what he wants to do. But does that change? I mean, does this, hit by pitch in the helmet, this beaning, does that change things? And also because there is a need out in left field, as we talked about before, where you have Brandon Belt, who could play left. He's not the best left fielder, and you do lose his defense at first base. But Posey's, an excellent first baseman. It's safer after what happened, and you wonder if the Giants are thinking about that because they do have this hole out in left field, and they do have this situation with Posey, maybe where he doesn't catch all the time. Maybe he's, not a backup, but maybe he's more of a part-time catcher.
Well, let me ask you this. You agree Brandon Belt's a good athlete, long strides, great defender at first base, right?
Right.
They put him out there in left field, kind of new to him, but is he any worse than Morse was in left field, or Pat Burrell, or Travis Ishikawa, or Barry Bonds in his later years?
Right, no, you're right.
I think Belt is better than all these guys,
right,
even though he hasn't taken a fly ball in months. So,
right.
So I would have no problem putting him out there. That's the position the Giants always seem to be able to hide a guy. You can't do that in center. You certainly can't do that in right with 421 out there in the right center. And you can't do it anywhere around the infield. But left field seems to be the one spot where they're okay putting maybe a mediocre defender or a subpar defender, because they have Crawford at short, who's got great range behind him. Usually they have a pretty good center fielder who can go in the gap. So I wouldn't mind that at all. But, Posey's value, his best value, is behind the plate.
Sure.
And
yeah, you want a gold glove.
The common denominator. He's the only common denominator among the everyday players in 10, 12, and 14, the three World Series championship years. And maybe the main reason, if not one of the main reasons, is because of him. His value on offense and defense and the way he works with Bumgarner and the bullpen and all the other pitchers, he's the real deal. And he won his first gold glove last year. He might have, been a candidate for others, but it was a pretty obvious call. And you put him at first base, he's not as valuable to the team. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and I mean, I think maybe there's some thinking that catcher is not as dangerous a position as it once was, once they put in the quote-unquote Posey rule, which he hates that being called that, but we don't mind saying it. But you know what I mean? It's just there's no more collisions at home plate, but it's still dangerous because you get all those foul balls back in the mask, and no matter what they come up with as far as the technology, it still doesn't change the fact that you're getting hit in the head. And they haven't come up with a technology that can totally prevent concussions because, we've seen it end careers, like Mike Matheny is one example. And, here you are with your franchise player. And, I don't know, after this last one, it has to make you think a little bit about what you do with Posey.
That's the main fear for Posey coming back after just 1 week. It's not getting in the box and looking at high and tight cheese. It's the foul tips. And sometimes they come in streaks. You get a lot of them. You might not have any, for weeks or months. And then all of a sudden you have two or three or four in the series. And when they accumulate like that, it's worse. And boy, across the bay, Stephen Vogt, it seems that he's a magnet for those things. And they're already talking about cutting down on his playing time behind the plate because a valuable hitter, maybe use him more as DH. Posey's not ready for that. Posey just turned 30. Stephen Vogt's 32, 33. But, there's no comparison. One's a future Hall of Famer, maybe, but certainly a multi-all-star and a guy with three rings. But in Posey's case, he is, like I said, more important to the team behind the plate, and that's where he wants to play. Now, if he, begged and pushed and demanded to play first base, I assume that he wouldn't be catching much longer, but that's not the case at all.
Let's switch gears and talk about the pace of play in Major League Baseball. It's really been a major topic of conversation. The commissioner, Rob Manfred, he really wants to speed things up, except for, they have replay, which kind of takes some time. I'm not in the camp, John, of trying to speed up baseball. I just love it the way it is. I just don't need things to be sped up. I mean, I understand there's a lot of pitching changes that can get annoying, but I'm pretty good with the way it is now. What do you think? What do you think Major League Baseball is going to do? They did try to speed up replay, you know, they expedited it by saying, okay, you get 10 seconds as a manager to decide whether or not you're going to have that replay. And I like that. I don't even know if you need 10 seconds. I mean, to me, it's just, if you see it on the field, it was an obvious bad call, just do it. But, you know, it seems like maybe that's helped. But what about everything else? Because it just seems like Commissioner Manfred is hell-bent on trying to figure out ways to speed up baseball.
Well, I don't hear many complaints from people who actually attend the games on a regular basis, you know, except for the folks in the press box who can complain about anything. But
right.
I'm talking about people, you know, the fans, the players, the coaches, the managers. I mean, they're into it, and they're there. They spend a few bucks. They go to the game. You know, the players make a few bucks. They play the game. And it was never, ever, you know, for fans and players alike, from childhood on, about a clock or hurrying up the pace or let's not throw four wide ones, let's just signal him to first base for an intentional walk. It was never about that at all. And, you know, the pace of play was never – well, let me go back. I was doing some research the other day on another story, and I was going through some old newspaper articles. I came across one in the late 50s in which the American League owners met to discuss pace of play, because they were so upset that the previous year's games averaged 2 hours and 32 minutes.
That seems so fast now. Yeah.
So you know what they discussed? They discussed a rule change in which coach or manager could visit the mound only twice. So I take it that before then, you can go out unlimited time, talk to your pitcher. You know, it just wasn't practice.
Yeah.
You know, pitchers didn't want anyone out there talking to them, especially a coach or manager, right? You think Bob Gibson ever wanted that?
No.
But this was the 50s, when they were probably even harder on this thing. So they met to discuss, well, you know, we can penalize the team by forcing the pitcher to leave the game after two mound visits. Penalize the team. So it was pretty hilarious. So that's, I mean, now we know that two mound visits,
that's it.
Know,
yeah.
It's intentional. You go out there to relieve. I mean, you don't go out there. So whoops, that's my second one. Sorry, I got to take you out.
No, you know, you're going out there
penalized
to get them, right? Yeah.
So anyway, I mean, For all this talk, it's nothing new, I guess, because I came across this article when the American League owners were complaining about 2.5-hour games. But I think you can only go so far with this. You know, this whole, put a guy on second or third or whatever in extra innings the clock. I mean, they already have a clock to start the next inning, which really isn't that noticeable. And whether you need it or not, that's, you know, it's kind of up to the umpires to move things along anyway at any level, including the major leagues. So now that they have a clock, it's just kind of being official. Hey, this is when you get your six pitches. This is when you start the inning. The commercial's over. Let's go, bang. But I just think the biggest problem is these replays. I think there's just too many of them. There are too many times where the manager might step up in front of the dugout, signal to the umpire, look back at the bench coach who's on the phone with the guy in the video room. And sometimes they do it just to, you know, offset the rhythm of the starting pitcher or the relief pitcher, right?
Right, right.
You know, you've seen that. But sometimes the umpire's just got to say, no, you know, you're not even close. You know, he's out by 5 feet. Let's play ball. But nobody does that. And I'd also like to see New York move a little quicker on these things. The other day in San Francisco, there was a play at first base, and there's supposed to be a two-minute rule. Well, this went about 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, the rule the rule actually says 2 minutes unless you need a little bit longer, which isn't really a two-minute rule. But the fine print says, well, if you need some more time, you could take some more time.
There's flexibility.
But anyway,
they
really need to cut it off. Why can't they figure it out in 1 minute?
Yeah.
Look at the replay before the manager is signaling to the umpire, before the bench coach gets on the horn with the folks in the, you know, in the video room. I mean, don't wait until the umpires jog off the field and put those silly headphones on and then make the phone call, collect call to New York. It just goes on and on and on, and it just seems it can be a lot quicker.
I agree, and I just think just eliminate a lot of it by saying you can get one replay and that's it. You know, I mean, that it's got to be obvious, you know, rather than you get more than one. Each manager should just get one, I think.
No, sure. I mean, that's, you know, why not? And you know, play in the first or second inning, you know, maybe two at the most, and whether you get the first one right or not. And, you know, that way if they're two real bad calls, you could at least.
Yeah.
But shorten them. You make it so that you can, you know, the pace of the game, the pitchers have to throw five or six pitches just to keep loose. And, you know, if it's the third out, the team coming off the field is just kind of standing there,
right.
And the fans are doing nothing, and the umpires are doing nothing. It's just kind of ridiculous.
It is ridiculous. You know what else is ridiculous, in my opinion? And I totally respect this man, Joel Sherman, from the New York Post and MLB Network. You know, I respect all the scribes and other media members, but he's got this idea that you should stop games after 12 innings. That's, you know, long enough. Can't go farther than that. And, you know, that can't happen. I mean, there's so many of us, you know, that love baseball enough that if it keeps going, it's fun. I mean, it's like, hey, when's this game going to end? And I understand schedules, whatever. You could be there till 1 o'clock in the morning. You know, you could have that 33-inning game that they had between Rochester and Pawtucket back in 1981. You know, that's probably not going to happen again. But stopping the game at 12 innings and saying it's a tie, I don't know where he came up with that. What do you think of that idea?
I don't know. Is there enough room in the standings in the morning sporting green? I'm not sure. But I guess I see his point. You know, teams are so caught up with their young arms, their injuries. They don't want to get guys hurt, and they're extending guys two or three extra innings more than scheduled. Not enough arms out there. Well, I mean, just figure it out. I mean, this isn't about the media getting home sooner or that all-star game in Milwaukee that ended in a tie because the managers ran out of players, which led to that nightmare rule that the league that wins the all-star game gets home field advantage for the World Series, which we no longer have, thankfully. But, hey, let ties happen in soccer. Let ties happen in hockey. But, you know, baseball, you play it out until there's a winner. There's a winner and there's a loser. And
yeah.
It's always, I don't want to be the guy who said that's always been that's the way it's always been, but that's the way it's always been. So leave it.
Yeah, I agree. You can't change that stuff around. Well, John, thank you very much for your time today. Look forward to catching up with you again. You got the Dodgers coming to AT&T Park next week. That's going to be exciting on that homestand. So lots more to go here in the month of April as far as all the decisions the Giants have to make.
Yeah, and it's kind of fun to see those standings when you see the Rockies and the Diamondbacks leading one division and the
right.
Reds leading the other division. There's nothing better than April baseball. Huh?
That's exactly right. All right, thanks, John. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
That's John Shea from the San Francisco Chronicle. We'll be checking in with him throughout the 2017 season. Coming up on Monday, we've got a special guest, Kane Russell from Halo Neuroscience, will be joining us. They have a partnership with the San Francisco Giants that helps the players with their training, and it'll be very interesting to learn about that on Monday. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. Thanks for listening to Inside China Basin on thesportsvirus.com and now on canbr.com.